Hi everyone, I'm Cheryl McNeil Fisher. Dr. Kathy King and I want you to know you are important to us. We are thrilled that you're here with us today for another episode of Writing Works Wonders.
Welcome to Writing Works Wonders. We're so pleased you're with us for episode 124. We have an exciting discussion with best-selling author Lori Alice Eakes. We look forward to your active participation in this show. So buckle up, Buttercup. It's time to celebrate the craft of writing with your friends at Writing Works Wonders. I'm Dr. Kathy King, and I'm so pleased to introduce you to my fabulous co-host, Cheryl McNeil Fisher.
Yay! Hi, everybody. Hi, Kathy. I'm so glad to be here with all of you. We have a great show ahead of us, and I not only have a great co-host, but a friend. And can you guys believe this? We've been doing this for 3 years. Oh my gosh. What will we do next? I guess just to be continued. We'll start the interview with Kathy in just a minute. I'll tell you a little bit about Lori Alice Eakes. She prefers Alice, and she's written over 30 books under the name Lori Alice Eakes. Her publicist told her it was a nice name to publish her books under. I think it's very pretty myself. And so we're going to find out about her books and her transitioning from Lori Alice Eakes to Alice Eakes and what that entails and what she has planned. And we're so excited about that. She lives north of Chicago, west of Michigan. She loves nature, especially if she's near the water. I know I can identify with that. And I think Kathy can too. And she lives with her husband, her guide dog, yay, her pet dog, and a couple of cats. So there's so much more about her, and I'm sure you're going to hear about it from our questions. And if not, we know you guys all have great questions too. So back to you, Kathy.
Thank you so much. Welcome to the show, Alice. We're so happy to have you here.
I'm really happy to be here.
Terrific. You've been writing Christian romance under the name Lori Alice Eakes for several years. And you've been telling us that you're transitioning to a different topic area and using the name Alice Eakes in the future. Can you tell us how this decision came about? I think it'd be very interesting to our readers and writers.
Well, it takes some background. I grew up in a very religious family. I still have a very religious family. And I wanted to write things that would honor them. And I just met a bunch of Christian writers, and I basically got an agent without really trying. I mean, she offered to represent me just from reading a sample I had posted to a forum. And that got me started there, although not all of my books that I have published are Christian. Some of them are secular, like my very first book is a Regency, and that's secular, and a few others. And I try not to make them preachy. They're more spiritual than overtly Christian for the most part. And the transition is interesting. It has to do with me transitioning, in that I became estranged from my family for various reasons. And my mother passed away, and she was my biggest fan. So I just stopped going to church because I had a lot of disagreements with what was being preached, not very much inclusion. And I'm all about inclusion and of everybody, and believe that everybody deserves to be loved and cared for. And I just couldn't take the separation that was demanded of me as a church-going person and of my family. So I decided that I was going to write something else as soon as my contracts were finished. And I had one more book to write for Harlequin, and I was struggling with it very much because I didn't want to write it because it was for the inspirational genre that they have. They have a line that's a category that's love inspired. And I didn't want to write it. I had to because I was under contract. They paid me money. Of all the weird things, though, it's not a good thing necessarily, but in some ways it is a good thing, is that I got carpal tunnel syndrome extremely badly in my right hand. My fingers went numb on my right hand, and I can't feel the keyboard keys, so I couldn't type. So I was able to cancel my contract. It does make writing difficult, though I am finding other ways to get around that. And I want to, move on and write what I want to write.
I think that that's a demonstration of some of the changes that we go through in our careers. Whatever field we're in, we develop, we grow, we change as adults over our lifespan, and we make decisions. I can say that I went through a similar decision in my lifetime. I recognize the struggle that's inherent in that, a big struggle for you, I'm sure, in many different aspects of it. At the same time, it's very exciting. But I also want to point out to the listeners that the carpal tunnel situation is a very present concern, that this is a current disability that you're dealing with right now, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I have surgery in 2 weeks.
Yeah. So this is a very present reality that Alice is coping with. So yes, tell us what you'll be writing in the future.
I love two genres, probably my two favorite genres, young adult and mysteries. So I either will write both or maybe combine them and write mysteries for young adults. I taught high school for 2 years, way back in the dark ages. And I love high school kids. I love that age group. And I get pretty annoyed when people badmouth teens, because I think they're very special, a very special time in their lives. And I didn't really have a lot of young adult books to read when I was a teen, and I wished I had. I read a lot of stuff that was probably really inappropriate for somebody my age, for a 16-year-old. And so there's a lot there. Those are my two things. And mysteries, I just love mysteries. I have read mysteries all my life. I grew up on Mary Stewart and Barbara Michaels and, lots of people like that. Phyllis Whitney. I'm showing my age here.
That sounds very exciting to combine those genres and address that audience. I think we're in a similar age group. Certainly the young adult market was not as large when we were in our teens. And
right.
So very often we did end up reading things that were for other age groups. Cheryl mentioned that you have a guide dog. For this audience, it's of great interest that you're visually impaired. It's also of great interest. You were just mentioning before we went on the air that you have a degree in creative writing. You're an author that understands visual impairment, and you've also been very well prepared for your career as a writer. What have been some of the challenges that you've experienced as a writer, and how have you overcome those? How have you addressed those?
One of the major challenges I have faced is there's a lot of prejudice against blind people in publishing. I have had editors who just flat out refused to work with me. I had an agent, she accepted me, and then she dropped me after she met me and found out I was blind. I've had a publisher drop me after they met me in person and found out I was blind. It's not pretty. That was a challenge to overcome. That was a big challenge to overcome.
Absolutely.
And then there's just some of the logistics of it that I have to overcome. Like, I've been typing all my life. I learned how to type when I was 7 or 8 years old. Yet somehow the brain and the fingers do not always communicate well with one another. And I make a lot of typos. So I've just learned that I have somebody proofread it, my manuscripts before I send them, and it's not cheap to do that. But I just set aside some of the advance and know that I'm going to have to pay somebody to proofread my documents for me so they're clean when they get to the editor.
How did you process the fact that these people dropped you once they learned that you were blind? How did you kind of make peace with that or move on from it?
I was pretty devastated. At one time, I just told my agent I was quitting, that if that's how I was going to get treated, forget it. And because I hadn't, if that's, I hadn't, the first time that happened to me, I hadn't sold anything yet. I was still writing and submitting unpublished. And she suggested I write in a different genre than I've written in, and that I write a genre, a time period I really liked, which is the Regency. She says, I know an editor who's looking for Regencies. So I wrote it. I wrote a proposal, which is a synopsis of the plot and the first three chapters. And she sent it out. I was working full time at this time and had a really long commute. So I wrote on the train going to work and back. I lived in outside DC at the time. And she sent it to the editor on a Monday. This was back, we were still doing paper for the most part. And then on Wednesday, the editor basically opened it up, read it, and called my agent and said, I want a full manuscript. So I
Oh.
scrambled. I scrambled to write it and send it off to her. And then the fun of publishing, hurry up and wait. It took 5 more months before I heard back from the editor. But, and that was when I sold my first book. So I just channeled all that anger into the passion of writing. And, success is the best revenge against somebody who treats you that way.
And your agent was an important support.
My agent was a very important support. I also have to say that one of the editors who dissed me a few years after she did, she was asking me to endorse her writers. Those little blurbs you get at books, like so and so author says. So that was fun.
Thank you for your openness with us. I know this, what you've shared will help people understand the writing career and help people navigate better. And we appreciate your openness. Cheryl, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much, Alice, for being here with us. And I have carpal tunnel appointment in May. I put it off and put it off. It was hard to go. But I had to make a decision off on another note because these are important things that so many writers go through. I was a crocheter and I had to stop crocheting. I had a choice of either crochet or write. And so hopefully, you're going to, not hopefully, you're going to have success, and I will figure out and get success with mine too. You have talked about the romance writers conferences, and so when did you first go to one? Why do you feel they're so important, and how has it helped you over the years?
My first couple conferences I went to were regional conferences, so they were not national. I think it was somewhere here in Illinois. I was living in Iowa at the time. That was very eye-opening for me because I met industry professionals and talked to actual editors, found out they really aren't gods up on Mount Olympus. And they're real people. And, having a really cute golden retriever at that time helped so much.
They are pretty.
That was one thing. And then I went to a national conference and I was really, really overwhelmed. But I had friends who were there. So that helped a lot. They can be overwhelming because they can be pretty huge.
What I find important about a conference, and even the next question, we're going to be talking about marketing, is that I have always needed someone with me who can get me to where I need to be. So I've had people in my life say, well, that person's busy, or that person's busy, or they won't say anything and not get me where I need to be. And then I have another friend who will sit at a table with me and she'll be saying, Cheryl wrote these books. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, you're the author. Having the right people with us when we're out going to those things and who are aware that they can be, they're overwhelming for sighted people, and how they can, what their part is and how they can help you. And sometimes we really need to look at, we have friends who mean well, but how have you dealt with that?
I learned to give my friends as much space as they needed and not to rely on them too much. I was really fortunate that I mostly had somebody, really great roommates, two different women I roomed with, and they took a lot of good care of me. But one thing I learned to do was arrange with, every conference has a hotel coordinator person, the conference, and I would be in contact with them through the organization and go early. I'd go a day early and I would learn my way around the hotel before it was swarming with conferees. That helped a great deal. And I said again, my dog was, especially the one I have now, she is so smart. You show her a place once and she'll find it again. She's just brilliant that way. And to greater or lesser degrees, the dogs are like that, but I've been very fortunate in getting around. And hotel, knowing it ahead of time is very useful. And usually they're more than willing to help you. Marriott in Times Square in New York City was not cooperative, and they have awful elevators. They're the kind you have to punch in a thing and it tells you which elevator to go to, and oh, it was a nightmare. I often just use the escalator.
We go to this one resort when we've gone on vacation, and there's an elevator on the left and an elevator on the right. And when I get in either one of them, none of them are set up the same way. People get on and I say hi, and they'll say, where are you going? And I'll say, oh, okay, I'm going this floor. And they push the button for me, because sometimes by the time I get pushing that button, I'm on a ride, I'm going up or down. I just, it's like, it happens sometimes. I hear you on that. I'd rather take the stairs sometimes, even though I don't like stairs. But part of it is humor and knowing when to speak up and when to stand our ground. Our dogs are such icebreakers with the majority of the world.
They really are.
Use them when we can.
But I found useful about conferences is, when I first went, I was learning how to write. And then after that, though, once I got published, it was meeting industry professionals. I meet face to face with my agent. I usually had at least, one meal with my agent, just the two of us. And one-on-one with my editors. I mean, that was great. I found that. And just, meeting other people. I'm kind of shy. And so I just had to learn not to be and to ask. Asking, not being afraid to go up and say, what room is the such and such in? Because I found that writers are very giving people. They're very helpful. You don't get turned down when you ask for help. You don't get turned down very often.
In one of your books, you were talking about a marketing group. Marketing is something that we as writers are often involved in, even if we have publishers. And you mentioned in the credits at the end of the book about a marketing group that you were involved in. I think it was with a group of other authors. What did you take away from that marketing group? What sort of ideas? What were the benefits?
We basically just formed a coalition where we decided to support one another's books, that when somebody had a book coming out, we would posted all over our social media, and that was pretty much all we did. And I learned that, that really helps to have a team of people who will do that for you, and not just other writers, but a street team of readers, and you get them advanced copies so that they can write reviews, and day one you've got reviews on your website, on Amazon especially, on the social media sites. And so too, that really helped a lot to have a support like that, because publishers really don't, unless you're a big name author, they really don't do a lot of publicity for you. I mean, Harlequin is easy because they have such a name that people just, I'm going to buy, all the suspense books for this month, regardless of who writes them. And so, I made sell through, I paid off my advance with sales basically the day the book was released, because I had the name of this publisher behind me, and people knew what to expect because it's category, and it's not a formula, but it's a formula. Every book is different, but they also have expectations, and the readers know this, and they trust that.
I like that description, expectations rather than formula. I like that. That's really good. They know what to expect from that series. Yeah. What did you find that were some of the formative contributors to your development as a was it just your training in school, or were there other things that contributed to it, Alice?
I come from a family of readers, and I had people read to me all my life. My grandfather used to tell us stories that he would make up, and pretty much on the spot. And he told the stories of these two little girls, Beansy and Peasy. That's my sister and me. I don't remember the stories, but I don't remember that much. And he, so we had, and then I was never a good sleeper. I would wake up really early in the morning, and I knew better than to get out of bed and make noise. So I'd lie in bed and tell myself stories to entertain myself. And also, when I was younger, being visually impaired, I couldn't play a lot of games. When I'd be at family reunions and stuff, and everybody else would be out playing tag and things, and I couldn't. I would, entertain myself by telling myself stories or by reading. And that just continued. I just, and then I, loving to read, and I was an English major as an undergrad, and then I went to grad school for creative writing. I also went to grad school for history. I think all that stuff, because history, all history is stories. People say, "Oh, I don't
I'm
like
back.
history, it's dates," but the dates aren't that, they're not as important as the people behind them.
Think it's time for a question Q&A, don't you, Cap?
Yes.
All right, Chanel, now we turn it over to Chanel. Thanks, Chanel.
First up, we have Lisa G.
I met Alice at a retreat last year. Hey, Alice, I met her guide
Hi.
dog, which I can't remember the guide dog's name, so you have to tell us when I'm finished. But I do have a question for you, and great to hear you on here. I would like to know, you said that you're having trouble with the carpal tunnel and it's hard to write, and I'm curious what modes and methods you're using to be able to write, because I've been using voiceover, I use voiceover on my phone a lot of times. It doesn't come across like I want to, just sending a message to somebody, to the point that my son calls me, and like he never calls me, and he called me up and goes, I sent him a text, and he goes, are you having a stroke? Because I kept repeating it because I thought it wasn't coming out, so I kept saying the same thing. So I'm just curious how you are managing with that, and I give you a lot of kudos for that, and thank you for all your writing and all your sharing of your brilliant mind and your creativity.
First of all, Lisa, it's really great to hear from you. I use a combination of things. I mostly type. I mostly use a computer. I have a Mac and I have a PC. And I also have a Focus 40, which is, of course, a Braille keyboard from Freedom Scientific. And I have been using that more lately because I can't feel keyboard keys under my fingers at the moment. Hopefully I'll get that back after the surgery. But so I use, but I've been using the Focus. I don't like dictating. I did just dictate an essay this week. I was able to make some notes on my Focus because the keys are big. It's Braille writer style keys, so they're big. And I can work with those if I go slowly. And fortunately, I'm a Braille reader. I read with my left hand. So that helps that I have those are sensitive. So, and then I dictated it, but it's very frustrating to go back, and you have to go back word for word, sometimes letter for letter, and change what it interpreted. Voiceover can be a real pain. It doesn't seem to understand me very well.
Next up, we have Abby.
Hey, everybody. Lori, I'm just wondering, where are your books available?
There are four of my books are on Bard. Three are recorded. The Midwife series, which are all historicals. They're under one recording, one download. That's like 36 hours.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And those are long books. And one is called When the Snow Flies. That is in Braille.
Okay.
And then Bookshare has a lot of my Harlequins and some other books. I think my first book, Family Guardian, is on Bookshare, and I'm not really sure what else, but there are my books. And then seven of my books are recorded you can buy through Audible. They're recorded. And then, of course, everything's on Kindle.
Alice, you might want to spell your name.
Oh, sure.
My last name is too.
My last name is Eakes, mm-hmm. as in Sierra. And the first name is Laurie, Laurie, and Alice, Alice, like Alice in Wonderland.
Our audience is always interested in our author's writing process. Would you mind explaining your writing process? Like, do you use an outline? Do you not? Do you write every day?
Ideally, I write every day. I would like to. Sometimes life gets in the way and I don't. Process, I mean, it's good. So you should try to write at least 1,000 words a day. I try to write at least a page a day, which is about 250 words. My writing process, I come up with an idea and it's often vague. Sometimes I come up with a character first. Sometimes I come up with a setting first. Sometimes it's a situation, just whatever pops into my head. And I have no idea where these things come from. They just are there in my brain. Something triggers something in my brain that says, that make a good story. And so then I start asking myself the questions like, what if this, then what? I use very much a goal, motivation, and conflict outline. I actually outdo it very methodically. I use Excel because I like the columns. And I build from there. Once I have a basic plot and reasons why people do things, their motivations behind what they want, what their goal is for the story, then I start breaking it down into chapters. And I make a list of, okay, chapter one, this can happen, chapter two, that can happen. And it's not rigid, because sometimes characters get control of the story. And people say, that's really weird, and all writers understand it. If your characters early aren't, then they're taking control. They're probably not three-dimensional enough to be alive and real to the reader. So I have been known to change villains halfway through the book, like realize I have the wrong villain. I did that with one of my books. I was just like, this is weird. I had to go back and fix a lot of things. But I like having an outline because I don't like rewriting and rewriting and rewriting. I don't mind fixing things, editing, I actually like to edit, but I don't like complete rewrites. So having an outline keeps me on the straight and narrow in that regard.
I think those observations and strategies would be very helpful for people. As we were talking about the other day, everybody has their own process and you have to find what works for you.
I would like to just pop in real quick. When you were talking about dictating and the frustration of the checking grammar and spelling, I will put my shorter stuff sometimes into paragraph AI. And they have, it says fix and edit. It doesn't change anything except for it, your punctuation, your spelling, and I'm specific and put a colon after what you want it to do, put a colon, space, and then your text. I find it helps me to get rid of some of the major stuff. Then I can go back through and edit. Doesn't play around with your text. So just thought I'd put that out there to everyone. Thanks.
Sometimes things like that can be very helpful. And at the same time, I often have different grammar ideas or creative use of grammar. I like to write, one word sentences and one sentence paragraphs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because that's all, it's all part of the rhythm and the tone of the story. You know, I want really short, choppy sentences when I'm writing, you know, something suspenseful and fast action.
Our grammar things don't like that, though. They do not like that.
No, they do not. Exactly. And so that's why I keep grammar checker off on my computer. Yeah. It's spell checker, yes, but grammar checker, no. I would just be spending hours.
Okay, Janelle, carry on.
Yes. So we have Carla, and then we'll have Deborah.
I'm really enjoying this interview, and I enjoyed hearing about your process. I was going to ask about that, but since that question was already asked, I did have another one, and that is, how much would you say of your work is autobiographical? In other words, how much do you write from your own experiences? And also, do you ever have writer's block, and how do you deal with it if you do?
Those are excellent questions, and writer's block is something that I have dealt with, and I've actually wrote an article about it once because I figured out a technique that often it's not block, it's just misdirection. And you're often, a writer runs into a block because they took the wrong road and you have to go back and detour. And I'm sorry, what was your first question?
The first question was, I'm sorry, I shouldn't ask three at once, but the first question was, if you write from autobiographical experience.
Oh, yes, of course. I'm sorry.
That's what inspires you. Thank you.
I don't think so, but I don't see how one can avoid it. What's the old, I forget who said it, but somebody once said that, you know, to be a writer, all you have to do is sit down in front of your computer and open a vein. And so I think some of my DNA splashes onto the page, but it's not intentional. And I haven't really written any contemporary blind characters, one very minor character in one of my books. And so I don't think so, but then I probably do. I don't intend to. I don't set out to do that.
Okay, next we have Deborah.
Hello. I just got in here late too because I was out on a walk with my volunteer. What I try to write, somebody else has already thought of. So what is your suggestion for this type of thing? Expression and stuff like that.
To be unique? Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Sometimes ideas just flood the ether. And I have read books that are so similar that it's amazing. But no book is, even if your idea seems, you know, for short story, essay, novel, whatever, is so much like somebody else's, somebody else comes up with the idea. It's your idea is unique. You are going to bring your experiences, your perspectives, your values into that story that are not the same as the same person with the same idea. it's a totally different story. And one thing you cannot copyright is an idea. You can't steal somebody's idea. You can steal it, and it's not cool. I mean, there's a certain point where it becomes plagiarism, but that's, you know, the idea is yours alone. You can't copyright names, and you can't copyright ideas. Just go ahead and write it.
You know, there's just so many scenarios. However, we could be in the same place, same time. Let's say we're all at a wedding. We're all at a wedding, but then we each write our story, and our story is different. Yet the place is the same. The characters might be very similar. Like, especially when you're reading Regencies, a lot of those characters are very much the same. So many times when I'm reading books, I think, huh, didn't I just read that? And then I realize, no, it was just a little different.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Oh, we do have an audience member with a question. Alice Massa.
Uh-huh. Hello. I have this opportunity from one Alice to another, and I don't think I've spoken to another Alice since you were a guest at one of our Behind Our Eyes meetings a few years ago. So it's nice to hear your voice again and hear an update from you, and good luck with your surgery that's upcoming. And I too could join that carpal tunnel club, but to better things here, I will ask you a question. And what advice did you receive in your early years of writing that you would think was the best advice? Maybe not at that particular time, but as the years went on and you thought back over that advice, can you think of that and share that advice with us? Thank you.
The best advice I ever got was finish something. You've got to finish something before you can sell it. After you've had a few things published, then you can start writing it on spec. But, you know, that was an RWA local chapter I was in. That's one of the women there. She says, finish this book. Well, you know, manuscript. And other advice I heard at a luncheon with an RW chapter was from someone who was a guest here, from Sandra Brown. And she was our speaker. And she said, if you want to be a writer, then keep your butt in the chair and write. Don't give up. It can take a while. Most people write at least 4 novels before they sell one. Publishers buy about 4 books out of every 10,000 manuscripts they receive. So it's a lot of it's just perseverance, but finish something first.
Alice, before the show, somebody had asked about the timeline for selling books. Could you just recap for the listening audience? How long would you say that you have experienced? I know it's quite variable. From the time you wrote something till you sold it. So that's one answer. And then also the publishing, getting it to actually be produced and out there.
Yeah, selling is a unpredictable. So when I got my master's degree, my thesis novel, I finished it in 2003 when I graduated. And I sold it in 2015. So that's a big gap. Some things, you know, sell in weeks, and sometimes they sell in years. Editors are not, and agents are very busy, and they just don't always get to submissions very quickly. And then it has to go through their acceptance, and then they have to take it through the marketing committee, and it can be a while. And then once you get an offer, it usually takes least a year for fiction. Nonfiction can come out a lot faster, but fiction, in fact, a lot of times they want nonfiction to come out faster because, you know, it's timely subject. But fiction, it's usually around a year from the time you turn the manuscript in to the time it comes out in print or whatever format. And that's because it has to go through lots of editing at the publisher, and then they send it back to you, and you fix some things, and you edit things, and do some rewriting, and then you send it back, and then they go through it again, and it does a lot of back and forth before it's even sent to be typeset.
And that doesn't account even for the creative process of writing the work.
Oh, yeah, no. Yes, you usually, from the time you turn in the manuscript, it takes a while.
Yeah, it's a very lengthy process with a lot of uncertainty.
And my Amazon's a good place to find my stuff. I have stuff on Drafted Digital and Apple Books. There's lots of places you can find them. But as far as contacting me, you can contact us. Cheryl and Kathy. And I'm more than happy, believe me, to answer questions.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Don't be in, feel free to you think of something later. Or you read one of my books and you think I should have done something better. That's fine. I'm open to criticism.
Thank you so much. And remember, again, the last name is spelled E-A-K-E-S. Yeah. Kathy, you have anything else to say before I give out the prompt?
No. Thank you so much, Alice, for being with us.
Yes. Thank you so much, Alice. We really appreciate you being with us. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
April is Poetry Month. The prompts are, you can choose one or all three. Maybe you'll want to write a poem. Maybe you'll want to write a story. So, genre of your choice, 100 words or less, May Day, Mother's Day, Memorial Day. So we have three celebrations coming up in May. And I thought that might be a good thing to work on. And you got plenty of time to maybe do all three. Okay, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And so glad you're here. And thank you, Alice, for being here with us. And now I'll give it back over to Kathy.
And Cheryl, who's our guest in May?
Oh, in May is Audio Description Project. Joel Schneider.
Okay.
And then in June will be Philip Margolin.
Excellent. Excellent.
All right.
Thank you, Alice Eakes, and everyone for making this another fabulous episode of Writing Works Wonders. We greatly appreciate you being with us. Please visit writingworkswonders.com and you will find resources, previous episodes, and many ways to be involved with Writing Works Wonders and participate. If you would like to contact us, just click on Contact Us at the website or send us an email at info@writingworkswonders.com. Above all else, we want you to be encouraged, inspired, and enjoy the wonders of writing. We look forward to being with you next time.
Thank you for joining us today on Writing Works Wonders. Kathy and I are thrilled to spend time with you. A tap on that button that says subscribe so you will not miss our show. You can also tap on the link for writingworkswonders.com. It'll take you directly to all the show notes and information that we shared today. Then you can sign up to receive the Zoom link so that you can be live with us when we are recording. You can also contact us at info@writingworkswonders.com. Our phone number is 347-467-0221. We also have a donate button. All donations go to the technical expenses that Kathy and I incur in order to keep this podcast going. Kathy and I want you to feel encouraged and inspired and know the wonder in writing. And until next time, our friends, keep on writing.
Opinions expressed on ACB Media are those of the respective program contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views held by the American Council of the Blind, its elected officials, or its staff.